Welcome to Home Guard Radio, bringing you all the latest from our chaps at the front.
Welcome to a Home Guard Radio special.
Tactical Fallout.
And tonight we've got quite an important topic to talk about. Al, do you want to tell everyone what the topic is?
Tonight we're going to talk through the players pack for the Bolt Action Scottish Nationals 2020. So I believe we've got Stephen joining us as well tonight.
Yeah, that is correct.
Fantastic. So what I want to say first to yourself, well, not to yourselves, to our listeners, is that I sent the players pack over to Craig and Stephen and our other Home Guard member, Mr. Warden, last night, and asked them to read through it so that when we came to record tonight, they had it quite fresh in their minds. And I also asked them not to tell me anything before we started recording. So what you'll hear tonight is their live thoughts and my live reactions to what they think of the players' pack. So you two ready to go at it?
Yeah.
So the format will be, gentlemen and listeners, is I'm going to talk through each section of the pack, and then periodically I will stop and get some commentary from Craig and from Stephen, and hopefully share a little bit of my thinking behind it and what the players who attend on the 2 days of the event can expect. So the Bolt Action Scottish Nationals 2020 will take place on the 26th and 27th of September in Common Ground Games in Stirling. So the players' pack goes into details of the address, which I'm not going to bother with. The introduction. Welcome to the 5th Annual Bolt Action Scottish Nationals. This event will bring together like-minded gamers from across Scotland and beyond in a competitive yet friendly environment. This event will also include the use of soft scores, which will be elaborated upon further. Needless to say, a balance of strong gameplay, creative army building, and fine sportsmanship will be needed to achieve overall victory. So does that make sense to you guys?
Yep.
No commentary required?
Nah.
Good.
Nah.
Fantastic.
We'll get to that later.
Good. So the format of the weekend. The event consists of 5 games of Bolt Action played over 2 days. The ticket cost is £32.50 per player. This covers entry to Common Ground Games itself, participation in the event, and lunch on each of the days. Game length is set at 2.5 hours, and time warnings will be given at each hour and with 15 minutes left of the round. Once time is called, the order dice bag is closed, and if there is an order dice in a player's hand, they will be able to complete that unit's activation, and then the game ends immediately. So, format, gentlemen. Does that make sense?
Yep. That's similar to what we do all the time, yeah.
Yep. So,
ended time, obviously, for the dice in later.
What's that, sorry?
I'm saying it's up to 2.5 hour games with the hourly contact and the 15-minute round left. So, yes, it's slightly longer games than the other events so far.
Yeah, but that's you'll understand that later on in the pack. So I've got the event schedule for day 1 and day 2, and I'm not going to go through it because it's not really relevant. It's just timings for registration, the different games, lunch, etc. It makes sense though to those that read it, correct?
I had a question about it though.
Okay, please do.
So in the past we've had players who, for one reason or another, have only been able to make it to one day of the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like medical issues and things like that. So if a player comes along to day 1 and they can't make it to day 2, something, babysitting issues, for example.
Okay.
Does that, they're then exempt from the Army's Own Parade Award?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's no 1 day ticket price. It's a 2 day event. If somebody wants to pay the £32.50 and they can only play on 1 day, that's what they have to do.
Right. It might, just because obviously they can't take, they might well pay, their army are, they won't be able to take part if they can't make the second day.
Okay. That's the way it is. It's a 2 day event.
Fair enough.
So the next section is army selection. So each player will submit a 1,250-point army list for the event. This is the list that will be used in all five games. Armies must be constructed using the following criteria. So it's one generic platoon, two generic reinforced platoons, one tank platoon, and one theater selector platoon. There's a dice cap of 20 order dice for the event. That's just to ensure that all games are played in a timely fashion. Armies can be chosen from any official Warlord Games Armies of book or other supplement campaign book released by midnight the 1st of September 2020 for World War II. So anybody that's thinking Korea can just go away. The event will use the most up-to-date official Warlord Games errata and FAQ, published as of 21st September 2020. The use of special characters is allowed. However, please remember that it is only published Armies of books and additional campaign and theatre books that are being used. Please also review the final section of this pack labelled Additional House Rules and Limits, as elements of this also pertain to army selection. I then go on to detail when army lists should be submitted, etc. So that's not really worth discussing. So, army selection thoughts, gentlemen?
So, yeah, one question I was the 5-day cutoff for the FAQ to drop.
Yep.
Is that enough time for...
to absorb an FAQ? Yeah.
Okay.
The army lists will already be submitted, but... if there's an FAQ, yeah, 5 days.
So, query on the special characters thing as well.
Sure.
These special characters are allowed, however, please remember that it's only published Armies of additional campaign and theatre books that are being used.
Correct.
So, for example, say I take, German theatre selector from Fortress Budapest.
Okay.
Can I use a special character from the Stalingrad book?
It would depend on the rules of the special character.
Okay,
if the special character says that he can be taken in any type of selector.
So, for example, if the Soviet army follow their own theatre selector and they take Vasily Zaitsev or something like that, I don't think, he's talking about trying to make it sort of sportsmanship and creative and things like that, so kind of messing time periods, is that...
No, if the army's legal, then it's legal.
Okay.
But the special characters should detail if they're able to be taken in a generic reinforced platoon or theatre selector platoon.
I don't know if they actually do specify that. Generally, I don't actually know if they specify at all. I can check that later.
Different special characters will be written in different ways, so it's up to players to read them to make sure that it's legal.
The other thing was, what format do you want the army list in?
Whatever format the players decide to send them.
It's just because obviously there's problems with Easy Army having units that are not actually allowed in certain lists. You can put them through Easy Army, but I suppose you're going to pick that up in a check-in anyway.
Yeah. Yep. Stephen, have you got any thoughts?
One of the points I highlighted for this section was less to do with army selection, more about the list submission date over the FAQ date, because obviously if, for example, you put in a unit that is later than FAQ'd or updated and the points change, then your list in theory is potentially over points or under points. Under points, not so much, but if it's over points, then obviously there could be certain issues with that. Because the list would then be illegal.
There could be, and I think in that instance I would take on a case-by-case basis.
Sorry, a case-by-case basis? So, like, take for example the Stuarts. I think you mean like the Stuart example from couple of years back, Bonner, yeah?
Yeah, we could use that as an example, because obviously the point... dropped initially, but then with the addition of the casement machine guns, you could actually increase it above its standard points, and obviously the rules change for that unit.
Which would automatically make that list illegal.
Yep.
Only if you took the casement machine guns, right. You would have to drop those to keep in the points. So there is an option there.
As I said, gentlemen, I would treat that on a case-by-case basis. I think the one thing we've should realise that we enjoy with bolt action at the moment is it's quite stable in terms of the points of different units.
I'm just curious from a TO point of view, having it addressed on a case-by-case basis, it's, you know what I mean? It needs to be a blanket thing if you're going to say yes or no to changes. Because then you leave yourself open to criticism as well.
It's going to depend on the change, if there is a change. From memory, the past three FAQs, I've not had any single points change for a unit.
I understand that you asked us to sort of pick out points in the MUR.
Yeah, it's important. As I said, I would treat it on a case-by-case basis.
The thing is, I know we're handing lists into you, as TO. Are we supposed to bring lists with us at the weekend?
Yes.
Okay, I think that might need to stick that in. I think I couldn't see that when I looked at it.
Yeah.
Well, sure we've had that problem before.
I get that. I mean, I haven't gone to the detail of people writing a little list of reminding people that they have to bring your models and bring your dice and bring your measuring tape.
Having an army list to show your opponent prior to the game is good sportsmanship.
No, that's well pointed out, and I'll communicate that to the players on the run-up to the event itself.
No worries.
Anything else on list selection, gentlemen?
Nah.
No, I think the only other issues is obviously not issues. Things breaking up obviously is additional house rules and limits, but that'll be catered for later.
Yeah. So the next section is painting and modelling. It is desired that painting should be 3-colour minimum and all models should be based as appropriate. However, as there is no painting score element, this is not mandatory. What is mandatory, though, is that models be 28mm in scale, resemble the units they are intended to represent, and comply with the what you see is what you get principle. That's something you cannot get away from.
It's a good one. No more invisible medium machine gun upgrades.
So, do either of you have any commentary about that?
Nah, I like the 28mm scale thing. That's a Bonner trick, that one.
What I will say then is, commentary-wise, is that because the run-up to this event is what I would consider short, you know, the players' pack going up 3 months ahead of the event, which I think is quite a short lead-up time, but that's only because of COVID-19 and the uncertainty that we've all had during the course of this year. So I didn't want any barriers for people to bring an army. And painting is a huge barrier. And also, because there are soft scores, usually I would want to include a soft score for painting, but I haven't done a soft score tournament like this in over a decade, maybe even more. And in that decade plus, you know, however many years, there's a bigger rise in commission painted armies. And people not painting their own armies now. I don't know if you guys have experienced that yourselves.
We've seen people win events with painted or pro-painted armies before. Yours doesn't count because yours is pro-painted, but you're the pro.
Yeah, exactly. Players are playing with models that they haven't painted, and I don't have an issue with that. But I can't give out soft score points for armies that have been painted by players that didn't paint them. Because that's almost like you are actually using money, real money, to buy, you know, tournament points by using a painted army. So I didn't want army painting to be a barrier at all. So I eliminated it. And that was my thoughts there. The next section that I go on to is scenarios. There'll be 5 set scenarios that will be played, and I'll publish them a couple of weeks before the event. And I will publish them after all the army lists have been.
So are we doing rule book ones?
Not answering.
So we might have third party missions then?
Potentially.
People may never have played before.
Correct.
Interesting. You're saying a couple of weeks before the event?
Yep.
Okay, it's just because if you need to give people time to learn brand new missions, and with obviously the ongoing situation, that's not as easy as normal.
Yep, understand. But the missions that I'll be using will already have been played at tournaments around the world, and they've been sense checked.
No, I get that. That's not what I'm saying. you're missing what I'm saying here. So, for example, say Bonner and me want to come along to the event, and the missions are shown off 2 weeks prior to the event, so we've got 2 weeks to learn how to play the mission, essentially, if we don't know it already.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a brand new mission that we've never personally played, we've got 2 weeks to try and learn it in a potential situation which will be very difficult to actually get any practice of it in. That's what I'm getting at.
Why? I'll counter you. Why do you feel the need to practice? I could just not publish the missions, and you could arrive on the day and have never played any of them.
No, I get that. That's the thing, is you're saying it could be anywhere across the world by tournament that's been run, essentially. So any mission has been played previously.
Yep.
So some of the missions I know, for example, are somewhat complex of nature. They're not straight pick up and play missions.
Yep. I would not be introducing new mission type elements that people haven't experienced.
But you could be. That's my point. So if it's say it's a mission that's come from, I don't know, let's use America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been published on the internet and it's been around for years, but the person who's coming to it has never actually played it or seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
You're essentially dropping a new mission on them 2 weeks prior to the event that they may never have seen before, and they don't know how to deal with it.
Okay. Are you a good tournament player, or you're?
But that's the point. You're saying, are you a good tournament player? But the event, the brief says at the beginning that it's open to anybody.
Yeah, it is. Have you played all the missions in a book?
Yeah.
I guess I don't have an answer for you, because I don't really see the issue of the question in that.
I think the main issue that Craig's trying to pass across is that the scenarios need to be very clear and concise with their information, which most are for playing the scenario, so that when you read it during your 15-minute setup between game, that it can be very clear what both you and your opponent is trying to achieve
without any misconceptions. And I agree with that. And that's why I'm putting them out several weeks in advance so that people can read them. And I already know what the scenarios are, and they already are written well, and they are tested.
No, I understand it, but I'm trying to wonder if you've taken into consideration the difficulty around the world right now. And that 2 weeks may not be enough time for people to actually play them. That's what's going on.
I'm not putting them out weeks in advance so that people can practice them. That's up to them if they
That wasn't what I was saying. So, for example, when we did it before, any of our events we've done, we've never given the missions out in advance, because you and I both agree that lets folk power give the mission. But what we did say was they are coming from this source.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, it's always been they are one of the 12 missions in the rulebook, for example. We don't tell them what the missions are, because that's a secret until the day. But they know they can go and practice those 12 missions, as it were, and start to learn them.
Yep.
Whereas if it's an outside source from wherever, from an our tournament pack, this person may be laying eyes on that mission for the first time ever.
Okay.
And there are people playing who are not that quick on the uptake and are not that focused a tournament player.
Well, as I said, the missions will be released a couple of weeks beforehand. They will get the chance to read them, so they're not exactly turning up on the day and getting a complete surprise.
All I would say is then,
if they get the chance to practice them, that's great. If they can't.
All I would say then, I really hope the missions you're using were written for Mark II and they weren't transferred from the first edition.
They are.
Specifically written for the second edition of the game.
Correct.
And you've played them, I assume. I haven't. That's okay, it's just because you need to have a working understanding of them, that's all. And obviously there can be...
No, I have a working understanding because I've read them, and all the elements within them are elements that are used in the main rulebook. There's nothing new or otherworldly being introduced.
Yes, I understand that. I'm just you asked us to critique it, and I'm just raising concerns I would have as a player that I potentially have no clue where the missions are coming from.
Yep. Exciting, isn't it?
I wouldn't say exciting.
That's fair enough then. Any other commentary on the five scenarios?
No.
No?
No.
So the next section is prizes. So prizes will be awarded for the following. So there'll be tournament champion, second place overall, third place overall, best axis that doesn't place in the top three, best allied army that doesn't place in the top three, the best sportsman, so player with the highest sports score. If there's a tie, then the highest finishing player will win. Best table, the wooden spoon. Player's choice, decided by the players. Winner must have painted the army they are using. And then tournament organizer's choice, so chosen by the tournament organizer for their favorite army. When it comes down to the results, any ties will be split by strength of schedule, and a prize table will be used, and it's hoped that everyone will get a chance to choose something if we get enough sponsors on board. Thoughts and comments on the prizes?
Yeah, the awards?
Yeah, very clear.
Cool. No problem at all. So migrating on, round setup. So the first round pairing will be selected at random. Pairings in each subsequent round will be selected using a Swiss draw system, and the draw for each round will be based upon battle points only. The soft scores will come into effect when deciding the final placings. Thoughts and comments?
No, it works fairly well with that one.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. So the next section is battle points. So winners of each game will be decided based upon the victory conditions of the scenario being played. The winner will get 400 points, the loser gets 100. If it's a draw, each player gets 200. The players then will have tracked their order dice totals, and then they'll determine who's plus or minus order dice for units destroyed. So the example, player A beats player B. Player A kills 8 dice, player B kills 4 dice. So player A gets a plus 4 dice difference added to his winning score, so he'll get 404 points. And player B, his dice difference is negative 4, so he gets that added onto his losing score of 100 and comes away with 96. That's something I think that's become quite the standard in Scotland for bolt action.
I think that's pretty much what they run through West Coast Pairings as well.
Yep, and now that you mention it, I am using West Coast Pairings for the draw. So you're both comfortable with that?
You going to allow challenges? The old favourite?
Oh. No. Okay, so the next section is sportsmanship. So that's the first soft score that we're really talking about. And sportsmanship is between 1 and 25 points per game. So at the end of each game, both players will score in secret their opponent based upon his or her sportsmanship. How do they conduct themselves? Did they communicate clearly during the game? Were the dice rolls clear? Questions answered, rules queries easily resolved? Did you have fun? Was your opponent knowledgeable but not a nuisance? Did the game flow easily? It's a lot to think about. And each player is encouraged to score honestly but in secret. More will be said about this during the briefing though that I'll give on the first morning. But a brief rundown. So anywhere between 20 and 25 points, that would indicate that you've had the best game of bolt action in your entire life and that you'll remember it so much that you'll tell your grandchildren about it. Anywhere between 15 and 20 points, exceptionally fun game, a very sporting opponent, I will remember it for a couple of years. 10 to 15 points, it's a nice average game, few rules issues, but resolved easily enough. Just the sort of game I'm used to, and it's the sort of game that you would expect. Anywhere between 5 and 10 points, would be below average, some time wasting on rules queries, and a few in-game issues that require TO involvement to resolve. And then between 1 and 5 points, this would have to be among the worst games you've ever played in your entire life. Fast dice rolling, poor communication, multiple rules issues, time wasting, slow play. And you would have to walk away thinking you never actually want to play that person again. And that would be a really sad score to give, but that's sportsmanship. What do you think?
It's interesting. It's going to be difficult to... You're probably going to get a lot of 15, 20 to 25s, basically. 15 to 20s, most likely.
Good. That's exactly what I would want.
I'd hope. I mean, what's
the idea is I have exceptionally fun games. I mean, I would be surprised to see anything over 20. It would have to be something special. If players are voting honestly, anywhere between 15 and 20 points would be what I would expect at a tournament.
I think you might end up with a lot of 10, 15s as well now that I think about it again. I mean, what is the rule clarification issue? You know, like, if I have to clarify a rule, is there anything about that?
In what sense, sorry?
Well, sorry, you've got lists of sort of things that are good sportsmanship, so you know, rules queries and issues that require TO involvement. What's the rules for the TO involvement?
If you call a tournament organiser over. I mean, Right. Don't get me wrong, you can score between 15 and 20 and still have a rules query.
Oh, no, I get that. I'm just querying what the procedure is. Is it a case of your TO's decision's final kind of thing, or...
No, if you decide, if two players cannot mm-hmm. come to a resolution about a rules query and they have to call the TO in, that just absorbs time and it's unsporting to an effect that there's no compromise at the table.
Or potentially time wasting.
Another one, yeah. It might be worth sticking some bits in the pack about that.
Well, if players perceive their opponent time wasting, then the sportsmanship score is how they should reflect that. If it's so bad, they can call a TO over.
That's the bit. That's kind of what I was getting at. The TO, the bit of the TO interference, or intervention. I'll stick that in the pack just because it has happened in the past.
I appreciate what you're saying, but with this format, with the soft scores, if there's a player that's slow playing,
mm-hmm.
then they have to be aware that there is a sportsmanship element score to it.
But they may also turn... So, for example, you and I are playing a game, and you've got a fairly good chance of beating me and getting quite a good high dice difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I slow the game so much that we only get to turn two. Or turn three, for example. I'll get a bad sportsman's score, but you as the player who's doing what they can to win, you'll lose out on a sort of chunk of points. Yeah.
Yep, and that's a really terrible situation, but I would hope that players, if they feel like they're being slow played, their first port of call will be their opponent to speak to them openly.
I'm just queuing it because in the past it has happened and the two opponents they've not been grown up enough to resolve it themselves.
I guess as a TO that's a bridge I'll have to cross, but I feel as though detailing and highlighting negative behaviour might only encourage that negative behaviour.
It's more a case of there's nothing to say that essentially you can intervene. That's you're not warning them that may be the repercussions in general.
No, that's fair enough, but it would be sorrowful to have to do that.
No, I know that. I know we don't want it happening, but you and I both know it's happened.
No, and it can happen in any game system.
It's just without mentioning anything about your intervention as TO, are you able to intervene in the games without warning them that it's a possibility? I'm just curious because you're...
Well, I guess it's an expected thing that a TO can approach different players in different ways, but my hope is that with such strong scoring element in the soft scores that players will and should behave themselves because it will reflect in the final result.
in the end, it only really sacrificed them, was it 24 points? Am I doing the maths right, Bonner?
Yeah, per game.
Yeah, but if you're throwing a game, essentially.
Sorry?
If you're throwing a game, basically, you're what was the phrase I heard? Speed bumping the game. So you're slowing down the game long enough that the opponent doesn't get a good score. It's obviously, I get what you're saying about it affects every single game, but if you only like that in one game.
I guess I don't really have an answer for that, other than their opponent will be able to score them appropriately via sportsmanship.
Right. Okay, I was just curious, because it doesn't seem to make up for what the opponent, what the good guy, what the good player might essentially lose out on. Because they may get a win becomes a draw because of what's happened.
I would really hope that player conduct wouldn't get to such a low level.
I get that.
When there's sportsmanship scores involved.
I get that, but unfortunately it does tend to work out that way, I'm afraid.
Fair enough. Stephen, do you have any commentary on the sportsmanship elements?
It's more my inexperience with the soft scoring system, because I don't... The crossover of the points between brackets confuses me, but that doesn't take much. And the soft scores themselves, obviously with the different compositions, so obviously you've got 25, 50 and 25, I don't know personally in that position as a player how I would, obviously different opponents with different things, sometimes you get a bad opponent just because they played so different from yourself, but I've never had the worst game ever, never good. Really below average. It's never got to that point, but it's never been the best game of bolt action in my life. I've had great games, and most of the great games I've had have been in-house between us and like our big mix games and stuff.
Yep. And so for yourself, Stephen, that is a great guide. So you know what a fun and exciting game is because you've experienced them, but you don't know what an exceptional game is that you will, you know, live forever in your memory. And a score of over 20 should be really rare. I would fully expect scores between 15 and 20 points. You know, exceptionally fun games, you know, that really had, you know, seat in your pants sort of stuff. Sportsmanship is all about, for me, did you enjoy the moment? You know, you've 2.5 hours with potentially a stranger. Was it fun? Did you enjoy yourself? Did you have a laugh? Did you feel like you had not wasted those 2.5 hours? You know, and if it was an excellent game, is it 2.5 hours that you're going to go home and tell your wife about? You know, you loved it that much that you're going to try and bore your wife about it. Or on the other side, is it 2.5 hours that you feel like your opponent stole from you? You know, did they make you that miserable that they, you know, they didn't engage you in any conversation? They didn't make you laugh. They just sort of sat down, moved the models, rolled the dice, and it was like playing a robot. Or worse than that. So I think what you spoke about there, Stephen, was an excellent guide for yourself as to what a good game, an average game, a poor game, and an exceptional game is. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's more me from a competitive side of things. The soft score element of potential abuse when honesty is expected of all. It's not a negative for the system, it's more the players. Now,
it's players.
The majority of the players I know, there is not an issue.
Yep, it's got to do with players and players' integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm fully aware of the two terms that you know, people will discuss when it comes to soft scores is buddy boosting and sniping.
Low balling, yeah.
Yep, all of that. And that's something that as a TO I'll be fully aware of. But because this is the first time sportsmanship and player composition and soft scores, to my knowledge, has been used in bolt action in Scotland, I would hope that the players attending have got a good level of integrity and honesty about them.
I'd love to agree with you as well. I really would love to see that.
Yep. Genuinely. I guess there's some commentary that we can discuss at the end based upon this. But, is there anything more specific to sportsmanship?
No, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Are you? Oh, actually, one question. Are you publishing the sportsmanship scores, or?
That's a good question.
Because I know you and I talked about this before, but something different.
Yep. No, I will clarify this to all the players. I'll clarify it on this podcast. I will publish the total sportsmanship score each player gets.
Cool.
So I will not break. I will not break it down round by round. That's why it's secret.
We had this conversation. Yeah.
And I will not discuss individual scores for rounds with players ever. That's my promise and my integrity for all of the soft scores. It will be totals only. So once you've played your five games, I will generate the results. The best sportsman will be selected, and at some point over the next couple of days after the event, I will publish the full results, and it will be your total battle, total sports, total composition, total judges comp, and then your total points overall, which will decide the placings. So players should be able to vote in confidence that their score will never be discovered. So thank you for raising that. That's an excellent point. I will further highlight that in text commentary to players and people who buy tickets.
Nice. I know you and I had that conversation about another event a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So the next section is a player... player's composition score. So player composition is scored between 1 and 50 points. So at the end of each game, both players will score in secret their opponent's army list and the units that comprises of it. So was the list built and tooled to do nothing but win? Was there a theme running through the list that is clear from the units chosen? Did they do any min-maxing in order to get the best out of their respective nations and limit the negatives? A repetition of similar powerful units with no other reason than to power game? And I'll discuss this more with the players during their briefing, but I hope as well that they'll listen to this podcast, so they'll also already hear what my thoughts are. And I've already noticed I've made a scoring points different text difference problem here. Because it's 1 to 50, but the brackets are wrong.
Also, rules query, Tito, something that Bonner mentioned, and I just spotted it as well. So, see if players prompt, I give you 5, for example.
Uh-huh.
Do you get the 1 to 5 bracket or the 5 to 10 bracket?
The brackets are just guidelines.
Ah, okay. Go.
It's the points overall, so if you score 5, that's 5. It's not
right,
you
right,
score
right,
bad.
Okay. That's cool. I was just curious if it was literally a case of either falling to bracket A, B, C, or D. Okay, no worries.
Yeah, the brackets are just guidelines. So, I have put the wrong points in for the different brackets here, but it should be 40 to 50. Army is super fluffy and sacrifices winning in the name of theme and fun. And then it would be 30 to 40. One or two tooled units and a couple of units doubled up, but nothing to be scared about. What is it, 20 to 30?
Yeah.
Average list with a balance of tooled units, a few repetitive units, but exactly what an average list should look like. 10 to 20, a little bit of min-maxing visible, repetition of a few tooled units, and the weaknesses being limited, and then 0 to 10. This is the worst case of spamming and min-maxing I've ever encountered. No real attempt at anything other than building a list tooled and geared for winning. So, what do you think?
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So things like, say I took German Fallschirmjäger. Obviously I get a ridiculously limited selection of units. They're all going to be Fallschirmjäger units.
Yeah.
I take it that's just, you wouldn't consider that as me taking the same tooled up units and maintaining a theme, as it were.
Well, you've got a theme, cool. But...
Well, that would be down to the perspective of your opponent. This is the thing with soft scores, is it's a perspective of your opponent. So even if you were to take a super fluffy list, if that person is unaware of the fluff, then they could score you poorly. But then your other opponents who are aware of the theme or the fluff will give you good scores for it.
And it's all down to how you present your army to your opponent.
Yeah, for example, like you said about your Fallschirmjäger, when it's early war, if you're running about with all the assault rifles in the world, that would be a low point score because you've specifically given them the assault rifles over SMG options.
Yeah, but I think in that respect, it wouldn't... So that would only come into play because if I was saying my army was early war, but I'd be using late war Fallschirmjäger with assault rifles. I think Fallschirmjäger were a bad example. Gurkhas, let's go Gurkhas then.
Mm-hmm.
See, I just like to run a Gurkha's army.
Mary or para?
vanilla Gurkhas. Let's go for... I'm no fun. Let's go for all style vanilla Gurkhas. So I have, say, 5 7-man units of Gurkhas. Again, that does come down to the player's individual perspective, I suppose.
Yeah. It does, and that's what the soft scores are. They're how your opponent felt your army was, because you can have elements of the, what was said, super fluffy army.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have elements that can be quite repetitive.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got 4 units of 10 riflemen. You know, okay, you get that. That's a repetitive unit, but it's not a powerful repetitive unit. It's just a standard unit that's been repeated.
Yeah, I think that's what's kind of getting at, yeah.
Whereas if you've got 5 Soviet 5-man engineer squads with body armor, flamers, 2 Panzerfausts, and submachine guns
behind a wall as well.
Is that an army?
Well, it depends on your theme.
Yeah.
That's the thing, if I'm saying it's...
You can dress the theme up to be anything.
You can.
The best example I had and bumped into was I was playing a game of Warhammer 40,000, and my opponent had an Imperial Guard army. This is back in the 5th edition of the game, 2006 or something. And my opponent said that, Imperial Guard army come from a forge world that makes plasma guns, and they only make plasma guns. So I'm limited that I can't have any melta guns, or I can't have any flamers, and my infantry, I can only have plasma guns. How many plasma guns have you got? 27.
they actually wrote that in the rules later on in the fluff.
Yeah. So he dressed his army up in theme.
I guess
to try and hide his cheesy army list.
I get that,
and
but
it fooled nobody.
You're dealing with somebody. I think what I was getting at was, say for example, I built an army based on, I'm going to say numbers here, but I think it's going to be the wrong numbers. Say it was the 10th Engineering Battalion that fought at Bastogne, and I took nothing but engineers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strong theme based off a historical unit, because with this game the units were real essentially. That then obviously that then blurs the line a lot between the theme and power gaming, possibly.
Yeah. And then it'll be up to your opponent to decide where the line's drawn.
That's a difficult one for them, because
yep.
What side do you come down on?
It would depend where I am on the day.
The individual
game played.
I do find it funny you used fluffy rather than historical, but I understand the reasoning.
Words fail.
I didn't want people to get caught up in only thinking that history is a theme that they can use. You can use other themes that are not history to make a bolt action army. But again, I would when I wrote this, I was struggling to find, even in my own head, what army could I create that would get between 40 and 50 points? You know, an army that's super fluffy and sacrifices winning in the name of theme and fun. And the only army I could come up with was an all-Norwegian army on skis. That was it.
So, for example, if you were, say, you were playing the game and you were playing Brian Forrester's Early War 51st Highlands.
Can I nip you in the bud here, mate? I don't want to talk about specific army lists and what I think, how they would score, because I don't want players to hear my commentary.
I was just curious, because you've made a statement there that you don't expect to see anyone getting in the 50 points range.
Yep. That's a
pretty harsh comment from the TO.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm not scoring them. They're five opponents.
No, I understand that, but as the TO, as you're saying, we're recording this, people are going to listen to it.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know.
It depends on your individuality. I mean, personally, I would take that as a challenge to actually try and get to the 40 and 50. But in doing so, I'm thinking I'd be down near the 10. But still, it's one of those ones that, because it's down to the individual, and because the individual is so widespread between knowing their historical fluff and brand new players or people who just want to play the war game, yep, your scores will be widely varied on the day by their experience and their knowledge.
And to use your example, Craig, of your Falchion Negra army, you can make it super fluffy, have a great theme, but you're going to have some tooled units in there, aren't you?
Well, not in this early war one, no.
Yeah, but there'll be some veterans in there, won't there?
That's literally it. They get nothing else beyond that. They're just regular early war veteran infantry.
So that will be down to your opponent to score that.
Mm-hmm.
And their experience of the army, because this is scored after the game.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it go? I mean, we all know what an army score between 1 and 10 looks like. We know what they look like, and we're not going to talk about them, but we know what they look like.
Yeah.
And so that's what players have got to watch out for, because this is between 1 and 50 points per game. That's 250 points over the course of the weekend is in composition. And if people are doing the maths properly, if they look through this, the entire sports score total is 400. That's equivalent of one tournament, one round win. And that's by design.
Yep.
So there's five games being played, but the sixth game is soft. And it'll make the difference. And I was going to save this little spiel to the end, but when I first came to this part of the pack and I wrote the scores in, I think I can't remember who I was discussing it with, but I said, oh yeah, I was just tweaking the scores so that the soft scores didn't have a huge impact upon the result. And then I woke up the next day and I realised what I'd said to somebody. It's like, what's the point of going to all the trouble to get people to generate soft scores for me to input them, for them not to have any sort of huge impact on the game? No. If they're going to be done, they've got to have an impact. on how people put their army together, how they play, and how they can adapt themselves.
Or otherwise, it would just be like a base painted.
It would just be a waste of time. I don't know. It would just be paying lip service. So people, the players do have to think. So if, you know, if somebody does think that an army is worthy of 45, 46 or 47 points, score it. It's not me that's, I'm not playing the game. I'm not playing that army.
How that's are the, how are the score sheets getting countersigned by both players, or is this?
There'll be...
It's just so you can avoid your opponent seeing the scores you've given them, that's all. I'll just try
to... There'll be one sheet for the battle points, and then each player will get an individual scorecard, which they'll compile, and then when it's all handed to me, I should have 3 pieces of paper per game.
Cool. That's just something that popped in my head there.
Yeah, completely. Completely. So was there any more on army composition from you, gentlemen?
Nope.
Stephen, you're happy?
Yeah, I'm quite happy. Like I said, the soft scores are new for me, so getting my head around it's a little bit harder. Obviously, with the disagreement on my perspective on how powerful said lists are, when I build lists that are potentially down the bottom for scoring.
Yep. It's all player experience, mate. Player knowledge and their perception of the day, as one of us has said. The next section is judges' composition, and that's 25 points. That's not per game. That's just a one-off. A panel of 3 judges, which will be myself and 2 international judges, will score each list based upon a similar criteria as per the player's comp guidelines, scoring each list at 25. What we'll do then, though, is the 3 judges' totals will be averaged for each list, and this score will be added to the player's overall score as per the other soft score elements. That's fairly straightforward. You guys don't really have anything to say about that, do you?
No, not so much.
No, because obviously it's the same soft scores, it's just from the different perspectives of whoever's chosen.
It's a slightly reduced score. So the opponent's score 1 to 50, the judges, we've got a maximum of 25. So it means that we do have some say in the scoring, but it's minimal. It's 25 points. And just in case any of the judges have an extreme view, we're taking an average of the 3 scores. One reason I should say, the judges are international, because it removes any perceived bias from me, in that these other 2 judges will have limited or no knowledge of the players and the lists that they're judging.
Will you be doing blind lists, so no player name associated with the list?
No, I'll send them to the other judges. I don't think that's an issue for them. I can almost guarantee they will not know who they're looking at. And if they do, that's why it's an average. So that if they decide that they don't like that player, you know, it shouldn't be a factor. You know, I'm looking at Australia and America at the moment.
Yeah, I'm assuming you vetted the judges before and you didn't just go straight to the who's got the worst perspective of certain people.
No, not at all. Not at all. I may or may not see who the judges are, but it might be done after the event. Just so that there's some transparency. Or if I do, it'll be before the event because I'll already have their scores. So they're insured.
Unless they're a recurring judge, and then you could be the mystery judge.
Oh, mate, I've no idea if this this pack might not survive this event if people decide they don't like it. But then again, this might become the basis for soft score events moving forward. Who knows? We'll find out on September 26th and 27th. So the next, sorry, was there any more on the judges' composition?
No.
There's a whole section on ticket sales. I'm not going to talk about ticket sales, other than that all the information is on the Facebook event, and I've got some cancellation details in there for COVID-19 and other reasons.
You got a player cap. Oh. You got a player count yet? How many you can get?
I do, but I'm not telling anybody. I just want to sell tickets. I'm not going to do any sort of pressure selling.
I was just curious to see what they were doing social distancing-wise in Common Grounds, that was all.
We are operating on the basis that there will be no social distancing come the end of September. If there is, though, we already have contingencies in place that will not impact our player numbers. We will be the sole event using Common Ground Games that day, those 2 days.
Fair enough. Just curious.
Yeah, and I do hope that answers you. We will be the only event running on the Saturday and Sunday. Just bolt action.
So he's shutting the gaming hall, basically?
Effectively. Or limiting participation, because there were other events running on the same weekend, but I have had it communicated to me that they have both been cancelled in favour of bolt action.
I think last year we had the similar sort of thing where there was nobody else but us, but then we had sort of pickup gamers coming in as well.
Correct. And yeah. I think any pickup games, if there are still restrictions, would be heavily monitored and would be based upon what table availability we would leave behind once we've got social distancing in place. So yeah, that has already been discussed between myself and the team at Common Ground Games. So tickets we're not going to talk about, because we'll post all this information in different notes. So the additional house rules for army selection, which were mentioned earlier. So the first one is national characteristic from multiple sources. An army that has national special rules in both its army book and other theatre or campaign book can only select and use one source. This must be noted on the army list. So
talking like Desert Rats, kind of, they take the rules, the Maori rules, correct, from the Desert Book as opposed to the British rules, so fair enough.
Correct. So let's just get cut to the chase. This is mostly focused on Britain. If you're taking an army from the armies of the Commonwealth, you get your prep bombardment bonus, you get your free artillery observer, and then you get to select one of your fancy things, vengeance or whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you're picking an army from the Western Desert, you pick from that book.
Fair enough. Good call. Yeah. 100% agree with that one.
It eliminates any weird combinations. The next one, specifically Armies of Great Britain, the Naval Observer upgrade can only be used in theatre selectors taken from the D-Day campaign book and not in any form of generic or tank platoon.
Definitely a good idea. That thing's far too powerful.
Yep. The next one is specifically Armies of the Soviet Union. The Stalingrad selector from the Armies of the Soviet Union Army book will not be used. There's an entire campaign book dedicated to this now. Go and use it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because there's a number of theatre selectors that have dedicated campaign books now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a British Western Desert, there's two British Western Desert, two German Western Desert, there's obviously the Market Garden ones as well.
Yep.
Is it
The Stalingrad selector and the Armies of the Soviet Union book is too good, and it always was too good. That's pure, plain and simple. It offers the opportunity to take two of almost everything in a single selector without having to pay that extra tax of another officer. And I think it just comes down to, you know, the event that I want to see run. And I don't want to see that selector, especially when there's a very good campaign book that's come out for it. the examples that you've raised, in that where there's theatre selectors and the, you know, a campaign book has also come out to match it, those theatre selectors were average, and the campaign books that came out superseded them and made them, or were better, they were the better option to take.
I was just curious.
And well, that's my response. The other part of this one for Armies of the Soviet Union, any theatre selector from the Stalingrad book will not have access to Panzerfaust upgrades for their infantry units.
100% agree with you on that one.
Yep. Stephen, are you happy with that also?
I don't understand the ramifications about it.
What,
but
the ramifications are, Stephen, in the Stalingrad book, the Soviet Union could have Panzerfausts.
Stalingrad took place before Panzerfausts were deployed.
Exactly. And the German unit, the German units listed in the Stalingrad book do not get access to Panzerfausts. So it made no sense.
One day it'll get changed.
It's just a poor copy paste, exactly like the Japanese forwarded from the assault rifle.
The final section is for Italy. When playing in this event, Italian forces in their national special role from the army book will always get their D3 emplacements as per the army book. So they'll always be considered to be the defensive army and get their D3 hardcover emplacements.
Ah, so in an attacker defender situation, the Italians automatically become the defender. Okay, cool.
No.
Regardless of what they are, they will always get their emplacements.
So they still get the emplacements, but they will still be an attacker in certain scenarios depending upon what's agreed or ruled upon.
Correct.
Fair enough.
So regardless of the attacker defender position, they will always get their defensive emplacements.
It gives them a balancing from being penalised for being an attacker in certain scenarios.
Yep. And that's the pack. So, what sort of overall thoughts have you got, gentlemen?
Pretty good. A couple of queries, but pretty good.
Okay. Stephen?
Yeah, it's good selector. Like I said, when personally, with every option being available, with the additional outroom limits, everyone is affected equally. So it's good with me. And the rest of the pack is solid. Obviously, I still have my soft score inexperience that just plays by my mind. Obviously, going into a tournament, I know the soft scores are there, being able to... the tailor lists and compositions, but that's just my brain working overtime trying to figure out how to get the best points.
Cool. Well, I guess I'll tie up the end of the podcast like this. That. Oh God, I lost all the words there.
Baby brain.
I know it's terrible. The pack is designed around balance. And you touched on it a little there, Stephen, in that, you know, if winning is your goal, you have to have a balanced army, a good approach, and a good sportsmanlike attitude to the game. And I think for me, this stems from a lot of the tournaments I went to in my early gaming career were soft scores. And I was always encouraged by what I saw, in that sportsmanship was very high, and that players who went out there purely to win, if all they cared about was winning games, that's what they could do, but they would never stand on the podium places, because the podium is reserved for players that can win well with a balanced army and a good attitude. And that's what I would hope when players purchase a ticket for the Scottish Nationals, that's how they approach this. If there's any player or gamer that's afraid of a pack like this, then they really need to ask themselves some questions. Because in an ideal world, in my mind, being a good sport and having a nice balanced army is just part of what you should be doing to enjoy the game. And so I think on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this. If you do have any questions about the pack, if you could please go to the event page, which is Bolt Action Scottish Nationals 2020, and it has been brought to you by brushworkminiatures.com. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks guys.
Good night.
The preceding podcast is a property of Home Guard Radio. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Home Guard Radio, or you can join us on our blog at homeguardradio.com. Any comments, criticisms or reviews can be left there, or you can contact us on homeguardradio@gmail.com.